welcome to the Mile 99 interview series with your hosts, Greg Larkin, Mike Turner, and Jessica Harris. Enjoy this episode, and we'll hope to see you on the trail soon.
Welcome again to the Mile 99 interview. Good to see everybody again. I'm one of your hosts, Mike Turner. And so the Mile 99 is a place where we can all hang out with our like-minded folks in our community here and share our stories, our successes, our failures, our deepest trail secrets. It's also a place that we can get together and get kind of like the latest race news and get updates on what's happening in our community. We record in front of a live Zoom audience like you guys. So we have one take, no break. So unlike the trails, what's said here is on the record forever. I'm joined by my co-host, Jessica Harris. Hi, Jessica.
Hello. Greg is leaving for a big 3-week vacation with his family. So he's going to be gone for a couple weeks. We're kind of sad about it. So it's just me and Mike. I've been putting in some very hot double stroller miles the past couple days. I'm feeling a little dehydrated. So I brought an extra beverage tonight. How are you, Mike?
Doing good. We've had like weird times. We had blazing weekend and then a pretty nice weekend and then a blazing weekend. So this weekend's going to be blazing, pretty hot.
So I'm taking care of any of the interactive portion. So if you guys have any questions, throw them in the Zoom, throw them on the Facebook. I will go through them and we'll spout them off at the end of the show. We also have our Patreon, which is only $1 a month. It helps us keep the lights on around here. Eddie is one of our newest supporters. Sarah, Super Dave, Turner, awesome. And we have one more, Bethling, awesome people. So if you guys want a little shout out from us on the show, $1 a month keeps the lights on.
And we are going to have some, working on getting some swag produced, some hats and stickers. So we'll be having some things to offer our Patreon members as well. And, we're going to start to have a pre-order list, Jessica.
Yeah, it should be coming up in the next couple of weeks. We'll have a pre-order with some shirts and stickers and hats. We're getting pricing on everything, and you guys will be the first ones to know.
Awesome. It's going to be cool. I can't wait to get a hat.
Me too.
So tonight we are super excited to talk to a woman that has brought us many, many great races, including Way to Cool, Rio, Del Lago. She rocks the trails in numerous other races. She's not only a loved and admired race director, she's a well-accomplished athlete on both road and trail with over 150 marathons and ultramarathons. She's even won 800 milers in numerous other distances. She's a successful businesswoman, gives endlessly back to our community through volunteering at races and events and through many great organizations. It goes on and on. I mean, it's just never ending. But tonight, we'd like to welcome Julie Fingar. How you doing, Julie? Good to see you and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. So excited. Yay. I don't know that I've ever done, to be very honest, like a live, where it's live and people are participating. A regular Zoom meeting doesn't count. So yeah, this is like totally, totally something new. So thanks.
Yeah, the office Zoom meetings don't really count. This is
right. Fun. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, not everyone wants to do a live Zoom. So thank you so much for coming on. I know people have a lot of questions. Even though you put out amazing pre-race details, people want the latest info. But before all that, we're going to go all the way back. Where did Julie start? So take us back. You grew up in New York City. You are a competitive gymnast. And how old were you when you were a gymnast?
So I think I started gymnastics when I was about 6 years old, and I competed. I loved it from an early age and just kind of kept going up the ranks, if you will. And this is like 1981, just to kind of set the stage. And ultimately my goal in the early 80s was to make the 92 Olympic team. And so I know it's really like big and bold and never happened, but I aspired to just, you know, be the best gymnast I could be. And obviously I was in elementary school, you know, as I was doing this, but you know, it was a sport was a way for me to, I guess I didn't know this at the time, I'm so young, but just to kind of decompress and, you know, something that I could do for myself. And obviously it's a pretty much individual sport, except when the team gets involved and you're practicing with your teammates. So, yeah, it was something that, and I was good. And I realized the harder I worked and the more that I put in, the better results that I got. And I think, you know, whether I knew it at the time, but I was just like setting these small goals, which then became these bigger goals and kind of these dreams, if you will. You know, I just kind of kept pursuing that until I was about 12, 13 years old when I finally had to put the say goodbye to gymnastics for the time being. But it was, you know, it really got me into the whole, I guess, athletic world and just the mindset of, you know, putting in the work and setting these goals and knowing that you can accomplish what you set forth. Yeah. So gymnastics is where it began.
Interesting about that, because goal setting, I think goal setting comes from your parents, because if you're 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and you're setting goals that like the Olympics, that's pretty impressive. And that goes to show, well, later on the show, we'll see why all your accomplishments. So setting big goals became a trend in your life, looks like. But were your parents active? Were they were just inspiring you to set goals? How did that, or was it just you?
No, that's such a good insight there, Mike. No, my parents were, they're both entrepreneurs. My dad has had his own company for 35 plus years. And so, you know, obviously from an early age, I was watching him kind of build his business and him just work hard. And my mom was absolutely into every sport you could possibly imagine. And kind of the, you know, mom who did it all plus worked full time. And so it was kind of this, like, this just active way of me, you know, participating by watching through their actions what they were doing. And of course, again, like you said, at that age, we don't really know those words of goals and intentions and desires and things like that, but innately that's what it was. And so I just kind of molded what by watching them. And I am so thankful and grateful that, because I know not everyone has that opportunity and it just doesn't roll out that way for a lot of people, for whatever reasons. And, you know, mine was such a blessing again from an early age, because I really think I know that it has transformed where I am today and where I can continue to go from there.
So how did you transition from doing gymnastics for, it was 6 years, 6, 7 years?
A solid 6 years. Yeah.
So how did you go from such passionate, intense training to being done with it and then moving on to something else? How was that transition at such an early age?
Yeah. I'm going to be really honest. What happened when I was 12, I had an eating disorder. And so that it obviously it detoured me into some other areas that obviously I needed to work on first and foremost. And my parents thankfully recognized that and knew that as much as I wanted to continue with, you know, competitive gymnastics, I needed to take a break and, you know, get some help and focus on myself. And, you know, without going too far into that whole story, it was just a result of, you know, and I'm sure people have seen this or heard this or watched this, you know, watching gymnastics and other sports. But, you know, back in the 80s, there was no, the coaches did the best they could, but there was no, you know, nutrition guidance and kind of self-esteem and confidence building. So you either learn that on your own, which that's hard to do when you're so young and you're pushing yourself in a sport that you want to be really great at. And so it was just kind of a needed pause to just take and then get healthy and really just, you know, get myself back
you know, so that I could be strong and healthy and, you know, compete if I wanted to go further. But at that time as well, this is 12, 13, we ended up moving to California. So it kind of was like, all right, I'm going to transition probably to another sport per se, if you will. And when we got to California, you know, I'm in junior high school at this point, or finishing up elementary, junior high school. And I started doing track and cross country just because my friends were doing it. It was something to socialize and have a good time. And I knew I was athletic. I wasn't the greatest runner or the fastest runner, but it was just something to get involved in and have that. I think I missed the whole being a gymnast and kind of that individualism I really craved. Now looking back on it, I really craved that teamwork kind of aspect and wanted other people to support and to help, because like when we all help each other, it elevates, helps everybody. So yeah, I got involved in track and cross country there. And, you know, then again, just like gymnastics, it was like, if I put in the hard work, I put in what the coaches tell me to do, I could be pretty good at this. Again, I wasn't going to be the fastest miler on the team, but I was, you know, working my way to, you know, become a better runner, if you will. So that's how kind of like in the early days, like my running started. And it was out of the pure joy of just wanting to, you know, be outside and be with my friends and do stuff, you know, in a competitive environment. And, but again, that having the team and other people around me really helped me kind of manage my, you know, my confidence and my self-esteem, and also just, you know, keeping myself healthy and grounded too.
Yeah. Did you notice a big difference in the coaching in California versus the coaching that you had for those different sports? Totally different worlds, but it sounds like maybe you had, well, you were older too. You kind of grow up a little bit and need less or need more, but did you notice that the coaching was maybe more supportive here?
I think so. Yeah. And at the time in junior high school, most of the coaches were not, you know, off campus coaches, they were teachers. And so the track and cross country coach was my math teacher, who I loved. And I think he liked me too, because he saw I always worked hard and of course loved students like that. But he made it fun. And I think, you know, with, you know, fast forward to now, to our ages and whatnot, if it's not fun, like you're just, it's not going to be sustainable and you're not going to want to stick with it. And so, you know, I am grateful that again, I had that opportunity to kind of get into it, not in a, you will run this time, you will compete at this level. And, you know, it was really just like kind of, you know, let's go see what you can do. And yeah, very, very supportive and encouraging. You know, and I think I know that helped a lot. Otherwise I would have quit, you know, hands down, would have walked away.
So then you went from junior high, were you only running, and then you went to high school and you kept running, or were you doing other things during that?
I was doing other things. I was, you know, at the time you could, you know, it's not like today where you have to like kind of pick one sport and stick with it. I was dabbling and I was a cheerleader. I played volleyball. I played basketball. I did every sport you possibly could imagine, you know, fall, winter, spring, summer kind of thing. And, you know, obviously there was things I liked more than others, but I think it really gave me a taste for, you know, the different team environments too. Basketball, volleyball, very much a team sport. And again, coaches were amazing, not after like, you know, you got to score, you got to do this, you got to have the best volley. It was just, let's just have fun. And, you know, let's try to win, but like, you know, we are winning just by being here kind of thing. So I had such great experiences when I got to high school. I kind of didn't know what to do. It was almost like I was too overwhelmed with so many sports, you know, gratefully, luckily, but I kind of got a little lost my freshman year in high school, where I did do track And I was running competitively, but it was really, really, really hard. The jump from being in junior high school to going to, you know, high school where it was like uber competitive. And I was at Oakmont High School, which is here in Roseville for those of you. And the coaches I felt were very, very different, great people, but it was like, you will race this time and you will get your time down and X, Y, Z, or you're going to be like on the bench kind of thing. And so it was scary. And, you know, you're just in high school and you're still trying to figure things out. So I kind of waffled back and forth between my freshman year, sophomore year of doing track and not doing track and kind of going back and forth. And all the while I was doing cheerleading and dance team and things like that. So it was kind of on and off, just trying to find what was going to work for me at that point, again, in a kind of, you know, definitely a more competitive environment that, although I liked the competition, it was, you know, at that age, it's with everything else you have going on, it's really hard. So I kind of felt a little lost, and it wasn't until I got to college at Chico that I learned that, first of all, I needed an outlet to school and other things, but where running just again became that joy that I felt like back in junior high school. And I was just doing it for fun and with friends. Like we were just going to run and just catch up. And so like, it didn't feel like a run because you're like just socializing along with your friends. And then, you know, of course, if you got to go for a beer after, that was great too. But it really brought back kind of the whole thing about just, again, that pure joy of having fun and just being relaxed about it, no matter what, you know, what goal or what result was yet to come. So,
and what were you, backtrack a little bit, what were you running in high school for track? What were your distances?
Yeah, I was doing the 800, the mile. Well,
that's why you didn't like it. That's hard.
I know. Totally. They should have just told me at that point, like we discussed before this interview, you know what kind of runner you are. You are not that, Julie. So back off this bus. Yes, it would have saved me a lot of like, I don't understand why I can't run these times, you know? Yeah. I did, looking back again, I didn't know it when I was in it, but it's like, I almost needed like a 10 mile warm up just to do that. And yep. So I was doing the 800, I was doing a little bit of the hurdling. I was the mile, I was on a couple relay teams, a whole bunch of, you know, different mm-hmm. things, but nothing was like sticking. Nothing was kind of like, you know, my sweet spot, you know? So, that was kind of a little challenging.
High school is really competitive and really hard because they only have so many runners that they can run in each heat or each. So, cause I've, run cross country and track for my whole life until I was in college. And then I stopped and didn't look back. and it is, I totally agree with you. When I got to college, it's like, I found my people. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I was doing double days and you look back and those workouts were really hard, but it's like, maybe just growing up, I don't know. But once I got to college, I like could breathe and I just found my people, you know. I'm still friends with the people that I ran with in college because just your people. So I get that.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
Pretty awesome. So you went to Chico State, huh? Pretty local up north here. And then you ended up moving. So you decided you grew up, went to college, you moved back east.
I did. Yeah. I got a job in marketing. Kind of, I wanted to get into sports marketing eventually. And so I tried to stay here in California, but it wasn't working out too well. So this job in Boston, and I took it, and I ended up there, you know, getting more. I knew about the Boston Marathon, but I didn't really know about the Boston Marathon until one of my alumni sorority sisters was training for it at the time. And so she dragged me on runs and then promised me she'd take me to the pub after if I go on this run with her. And so I was like, okay, cool, great. Because I really, when I got to Boston to this job, I was all immersed. And so I really kind of, I went from, you know, making fitness and wellness a priority to very much not doing a lot because I was all encompassed with work and just kind of that go, go, go productive mode and too tired to, you know, go for a run at the end of the day kind of thing. So, so by training with my sorority sister, Anne, she was like, yeah, I'm doing this Boston Marathon and what have you. And of course, being in Boston, I lived right on the course at mile 21. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I have to come out here and spectate and be a part of this. I heard how much fun it was. And certainly, so that year, it was 98. I was out there cheering for her and, you know, watching all these runners, competitors in this 26.2 mile race, which I thought was crazy at the time because I had never run probably more than like 10 miles at the time and thought, I got to figure out a way to do this. Like, I think I could do this. And so, you know, kind of she helped kind of plant that seed, whether she knows it or not. And sure enough, 9 Boston marathons later. And yeah, so.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. It's you were, I mean, it sounds like it wasn't hard to get you motivated. I mean, you're the kind of person that just has a little seed, doesn't take much. And you're like, I'm in. You like the challenge. It sounds like.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I totally do. And I think that's just like, just how I am and how I'm wired and my operative system. But, again, I think a lot of it goes back to my parents. To this day, they are still like excessively goal driven. And my mom, just kudos to my mom at age 48, I might have it wrong, but and she's about 20 years past that now, but she went back to college at Sierra College right here locally. And she was on the women's soccer team and she was their goalie for 2 years and she kicked butt. I mean, I would go to her soccer things and my other two sisters played soccer competitively, were very good, went to school on scholarships, but my mom just, I mean, the courage and the braveness to do what she did and to be in with these girls that were like a fraction of her age was so cool. And I'll never forget, you know, all the times that I got to spend with her and see her and just kind of like, again, learn through her actions of what is possible. Nothing's impossible.
Yeah, that's amazing. I have two daughters and, you know, it's just fun to, when they're young and they're into sports and then they see me now still into sports and they love it. And they, I think it's a, I think you can inspire each other. Your children can inspire you. You can inspire them back. And especially when you see your parents doing something cool, you're like, that's pretty awesome. You get out there at that age and just digging into it. That's great.
Yeah.
It sounds like you were running those marathons and then but it wasn't long after that before you started getting into trails. And a couple of years later, was that in Boston that you were, or was it not to, how'd you get back to California?
Yeah. So the job abruptly ended about a year and a half later. And so when I came back to California, I said, okay, looked up the marathon online. It was the California International Marathon. I think that was the only game in town to do. And I was like, sign me up for that. I don't know what I'm doing and how I'm going to do this, but I'm going to figure it out. I got a coach at the time and I started running with a running group. And, you know, I think that I moved back in like the summer of 99. By December, which is when that race is run. Yeah. I ran my first marathon and it was the hardest thing ever. And I still remember it to this day, like how painful and how much I said I was never, never going to do this thing again. Never, ever, ever, ever. Who would want to? I was just obliterated by the time this thing was over. But of course, as we all know, that the pain wears off and you get talked into something else 2 weeks later. So, that's kind of how the longer distance started to, you know, get infused in me. And then it took me, at that time, the goal was to qualify for Boston, and my very first marathon out the gate at CIM, I did not qualify. That was the goal. I was 20 minutes off that time. So I ran a 401, and of course I needed a 340 at the time on the standards. I was, you know, devastated, but motivated enough to say, okay, well, I got to go run another and try it again. And so my second marathon was Big Sur Marathon, which is like insanely hard and stupid. Like if you're trying to get a qualifier, like why the heck would you pick these hills and stuff? But it served as a catalyst to back to kind of Jessica's whole thing, like what I was good at. Like I was pretty good at going up these hills. I wasn't so fast that, you know, I was blowing people away, but I was super steady and I could do this. And then of course, once you go up, you got to go down. So I do Big Sur. I run a 3:46. So I shaved, what is that, 15 minutes off my time on a ridiculously hard course. So at that point I knew I can totally find another 6 minutes. And so that was April. And then July, I went and ran San Francisco Marathon and finally did it in a 3:38 at San Francisco. So yeah, so that's kind of how that whole world kind of started. And then I think it's, you do the Boston and then you kind of, at least for me, it was kind of like, well, what else can I do? Like, how much more crazy can I get? And, you know, at the time, we didn't have all the resources and podcasts and things we have now, people talking about this ultra world. And it was kind of just this friend just mentioned something about a 50 miler. And I was like, okay, I think I could do that. It sounds pretty insane, but like, cool, great. And it was the Helen Klein 50 miler, which kind of kicked off, I guess, my ultra career, if you will. And yeah, it was just more of the challenge of doing something that sounded so out there, but I was going to figure it out. I might die in the midst of it, but who cares? I'm going to go for it. And it turned out to be pretty good the first time out. And of course, at that time, qualified for Western States. So yeah.
That's fascinating how you lived in Boston, you worked there, you were inspired by the people that ran the Boston Marathon and the struggle, but you lived at the wall, mile 20, 21. Mm-hmm. So you lived at the suffering point of the marathon. Then you go back to California just to qualify to go back to Boston.
Yep. Yep.
It's like, it's a fun circle of how.
It totally. Yes. I did feel like at the time on that first one, it really came full circle for me. So athletically and professionally. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's cool. Obviously you mentioned the Helen Klein 50 miler and yeah, like you said, that started off this ridiculously long, successful winning streak. And it wasn't until I started looking at Ultra Sign Up and thinking, it never ended. I kept scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. Just to recap some of the races that we talked about, over 150 marathons and ultra marathons. You were in Western States 5 times, 3 times in the top 10 females. You mentioned the Boston Marathon 9 times and CIM 9 times. Obviously, Rio de Lago, the Rocky Raccoon and Headlands each multiple time, Angeles Crest, and all of those. You know, it just goes on and on with, you know, always many in the top, winning them outright or in the top, the podium or in the top 10. It's just pretty awesome. Which of those early ones, you know, what stands out? They're really, obviously your first Western States, but what was, you know, when you started getting into longer distances, what were you thinking? Just keep going?
Hey everybody, this is Greg Larkin, one of the co-hosts of the Mile 99 Interview Podcast. Just want to take a minute here to give a shout out to Krista Cavender. We just worked with her. She's a graphic design artist and she redid our logo for us. We're really excited about it. We've put it out on all of our social media here as of late January and we highly recommend her services. If you're looking for graphic design work, logo design for your business, something like that, please give her a shout. Her Instagram is Krista with a K, Cavender, and you can also find her online at kcavenderdesign.com. Highly recommended. She does great work, really clean, beautiful graphics. I think you'll be really pleased. I know we were. So As always, take care and we'll see you on the trails.
I guess there is this kind of cookie cutter mold some people take where it's a, you do the 50K, then you graduate to the 50 mile, and then you graduate to the 100K and the 100. And I think, and I'm very kind of linear, methodical like that. So I did take that approach, like, let me get my feet wet at this, although I skipped the 50K and went straight to the 50 miler. So I guess I kind of aborted that part. But I then thought, you know, in order to prepare for these longer races, I better, you know, dabble in some of these intermediary distances and just see what this is about. And I think that, you know, they each distance, as you guys, as everybody knows, is so unique and so individual to, you know, kind of you either like it or you don't really like it. And kind of just, again, finding that sweet spot. And over time, I learned, of course, you learn tons about yourself, as we all know, through these journeys and processes. But I learned the longer the race was, the better I was going to do. And not so much the physical part, of course. Yes, you train, you work hard, you do all that. But mentally, I felt like I was going to hang in there until, like, everybody else dropped out, quote unquote. And so for me, like my mental side of performing, I think I know has really, really helped me, but it really has inspired me to, again, just like you would tell anybody, just keep hanging in there, because you just don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, you're going to feel better and all that kind of jazz. But if you just keep, you know, just keep grinding away and mentally chipping away at this distance, whatever you're doing, you know, you're going to get to that finish line and it's probably going to be better than what you even thought you could do. And so, you know, kind of there was how it was kind of evolving for me as the distance got longer and longer.
Do you think you liked, because you have a diverse set of winds. Western States is hot and Angeles Crest is hot, but you have a lot of like wet ones like Rocky Raccoon and Headlands. What do you think you did better at? Obviously you won all of those. So they, the number, what do you like better?
You know, I think I was good in the heat just because I practiced and I've learned, you know, strategies and tactics to do, but I think for sure, if now, in my older age here, I definitely prefer a more legitimate climate kind of race. So, you know, and I think most people, other than a few who just like insanely love the heat, I think most people would prefer, you know, obviously the conditions being more of a, you know, perfect runners, you know, runners temperatures and whatnot, because you don't have to worry so much about those external factors affecting you so much. I think it, you know, it does, I don't want to say make it easier because it's hard one way or the other, but, it's definitely more comforting to know that, you know, I'm not going to be sweating my brains out, you know, as I'm trying to do 100 miles, which is, you know, crazy to begin with. So, definitely a softer climate now.
Yeah, I think you're right, because when you're 25, your body can handle a lot of stress. But when you get to be 45,
yeah,
your body handles stress differently. And so you got to just, you know, just a little more effort.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Well, it looks like, and you've done some really fun ones in more recent years. I had another friend that did that treadmill challenge. God, it seems daunting.
Okay. So that, and I just did this in this past December. And I, at the finish line this year at Western States, I was there because one of my clients was running, and I heard Mettinger announce, is it Todd Yerkes? I might be pronouncing his name wrong. Sorry, his last name, but he did it, and I had seen his name on the results as I got talked into doing this back last September. And I thought, as much as I do honestly like to run on a treadmill. I think it really helps me with pace work and all that kind of stuff. But I never thought I would run 100 miles on a treadmill. That was like ridiculously stupid. And sure enough, you know, I was, you know, motivated by the challenge and do this. And that by far, even though you see Angeles Crest and all these other races in Western states, and not to take away from the brutality and the respect of those races, but running 100 miles on a treadmill is no freaking joke. And it was the hardest. It was so hard physically, but it was even more hard mentally, and more than I've struggled in any of those results that I've had in 20 plus years. I'm debating to go for round two this year. So we'll to be continued if I do that, but yeah.
Oh God.
Okay. Well, if I do it, you guys have to be on the support team. So
100%. Okay. The longest I ever did was training for Rio. Oh. I did a 50K on a treadmill. Yay. And the sound alone is deafening. Like, you can have the quietest treadmill, but that your constant same cadence, it will drive you insane.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. I hear you, girl. Yeah. Oof. Yeah. So
it's funny that last COVID made us do lots of weird stuff last year.
Like running I did mine way before COVID, so I've been weird for a long time.
It's good to be weird.
I was browsing YouTube when I found your hamster wheel challenge, and you did a Channel 31 interviewed you. Mm-hmm. And that was fun to see. So that was before.
Yeah, that was last August. Yeah, almost about a year ago now.
Was that you were raising money?
Yeah, we were raising money for Fit for Girls. Such a great organization, one of our race beneficiaries. And we ended up raising almost about $10,000 that day. We had no idea how it was going to be, what it was going to turn out like, and putting together, you know, kind of like the show like we did. And it just, all the board members from Fit for Girls, it just turned out to be, you know, such this amazing collaborative day. Not just because I was running on, you know, obviously that was the catalyst to kind of have this platform to do, but, you know, it was so much more than that. And so we may go for round two this year. I don't know. So yeah, we'll see.
You want to get into some of your, you have a long list of community service, but real quick before we jump into there, you know, FKTs, we've interviewed people that have done FKTs, passes not time, but you've also been jumping into that. Sounds like for COVID, you're really trying some different things out. I mean, you, like a lot of us, trying out different distances. So tell us about the Folsom Lake has been on a lot of people's mind lately, but you're on the list of record holder for that 69-mile route.
Yeah, that just kind of came up after I did that 12-hour Fit for Girls hamster wheel challenge. And I thought, I got some base, I got some miles, what else can I do? Obviously, there was no races, very limited. Arizona might have been still open at the time, but I thought maybe I should try this FKT. And I will say that, you know, probably like most of the listeners and whatnot, I've read about people that have done these FKTs, and it really never, it was always impressive. And I was always like, wow, that's cool. But it was really never something that kind of excited me. And until I think we're all kind of like forced into, you know, this corner, if you will, and like, you gotta like get creative and get out of your own way and, you know, just maybe try something different. And so, you know, had COVID, of course we all have silver linings, but had COVID not happened, I definitely don't believe I would have done that FKT. That was, I did it supported too. So just so people know, it was not unsupported. And I don't think I could have done it unsupported because it was pretty gnarly once we got into, you know, the, I guess the backside of Salmon Falls all the way over to the Olmsted. And then I had to cross the river and do all kinds of crazy logistics within that, that run there. So.
Yeah, that's a hard section. I run over there. Greg and I ran over there a bit. We were looking at FKTs ourselves, looking at that route, and we ran over there. It's endless. It's like there's no, it's just brush, and it's crazy over that side.
Yeah, it was definitely challenging, up my alley, but you know, something, and I very much underestimated, you know, the time it would take, and just all kinds of different things, which, you know, I definitely had some goals on that, but I was just so thankful to finish the damn thing and, you know, be a finisher and have a record and cool. Great. And I hope that somebody goes out and breaks my record. I mean, that's what records are meant for. And, you know, it'd be cool if somebody else is inspired to do it, and I'll totally help you. So, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Those are as fun as inspiring people. It sounds like since a young age, you've been inspired by people. And then if people know you, you've inspired people, and then through your races and, you know, you're volunteering. And so it sounds like the inspiration is something that you pay forward forever. And it's pretty cool. You know, just, you know, so we're talking about Fit for Girls, and, you know, you're involved with, you've been involved with a lot of different groups, you know, in Sacramento, like our Run to Feed the Hungry is a big event we have here. Was that the biggest Thanksgiving Day race in the country, right?
Yeah, I think it rivals against a race in Texas. And if Rotana's listening, forgive me if I got that wrong, but there's always this innate competition every November when the race is live, you know, to get those numbers and of course raise money for the local Sacramento Food Bank. But such a really fun event to be a part of. And I look forward to that every year. So
it didn't happen last year, right? But it wasn't.
No, yeah, it didn't. I believe some people took to the streets and actually did the race kind of unofficially and on their own. But no, it didn't happen last year. And hopefully it's going to happen this year. You know, I'm not totally sure on the sheer numbers and that kind of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah. And so just real quick, you mean Urban Cal and obviously Western State, CIM, Pace Leader, you know, U.S. Track and Field. You know, all these things you've been involved with, what stands out is ones you really have just inspired you back, and ones that you really just, you know, have given back to you more that you just love to be involved with?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have the road world and the trail world, so it's a little different. I don't know that the road, there's definitely innate differences between the two. So I'm going to go with kind of the trail world, you know, being involved in Western States and in many different capacities. And of course, being involved in Way to Cool and AR50 from kind of the early 2000s, when Greg Soderlund had the races, was truly, you know, kind of, you know, I guess your calling, if you will, and just being out there and being a part of a community, even though you don't really know a lot of people, or I didn't know a lot of people at the time. I know a few people, but everybody, you know, treats you like their family and just takes you under that wing. And you're like, oh my gosh, I have like a million different people in my tribe now. And like, we're all BFFs, if you will, kind of thing. So, you know, I think, you know, just all the trail races, you know, that I have had been a part of on the back end, the front end, you know, running it and volunteering and helping and producing, you know, has meant a lot to me. And obviously continues to be that way.
It's been fun being involved in every year. Western States is so inspiring, and all those races, there's so much just a camaraderie. I think this year was big for a lot of people, not just racing, but also volunteering. You've had your AR50 this year, just people getting back out, seeing their friends. This year has been pretty awesome. I'm sure the rest of the year will be just like that. Western States was just like a big family reunion this year.
Yeah, I feel like Western this year kind of kicked that off, if you will. And so it was really, you know, fun to like you said, just be out there and whatever you were doing. And, you know, everybody was just super jazzed to finally be back to our community and, you know, all these people that we've missed over, you know, a year and a half. So.
Yeah, that was fun. So changing a little bit of gears to business, we're going to jump into some of the businesses you've been involved with, and then end up what people really want to talk about is kind of upcoming races. We'll talk about some of that kind of fun stuff. So your business degree in you know, marketing, and you wanted to get into sports and athletic and business, you kind of, I mean, really, you've done just that. What inspired you as a young woman in college, you've done that. You know, you had the Fit to Run business, and then obviously NorCal Ultras. You've been involved with the expo director for the San Francisco Marathon and the Napa Marathon, CIM assistant race director. So you really have, you know, again, like you've set goals when you were 6 and 7, and you set goals and you knock these goals out. So it's pretty impressive, you know, all these companies you've been involved with. So how did Fit to Run start?
You know, so that was the late 90s, very early 2000s. And I was just coaching. I had my coaching certification and I was just working with runners, athletes of all levels and abilities, and kind of hence that was the company that began, so to speak. And then from there, it just kind of morphed into, as I was volunteering at these local races, you know, it all started out as a volunteer position and then slowly kind of grew, even though I didn't have the expectation, but I did kind of as to try to make this into a job in some way, shape or form. And so, as you can see, I was doing different expo management positions for different races during the year because, you know, we do this for the labor of love. Yes, I can have a business and sustain it, but, you know, the financial is not what I would get if I was in a different network, a different job kind of thing. So, but again, it was because this is what I felt like I was meant to do. And of course I was having so much fun mixing my passion and having that be my job too. So.
And then how did that transition into NorCal Ultras?
Yeah. So I was, like I said, I was working on AR50 and Way to Cool with Greg at the time, as a runner, but then also volunteering in the lead up to the races and after the races. And, he had told me, this is maybe 2005, 2006, that he was going to be retiring, quote unquote, at some point. And, you know, would I be interested in carrying the torch forward? And I was like, heck yeah. Oh my gosh. You know, kind of like your dream, everything. And it was not expected. And, you know, I think again, there's a difference between having goals and like expectations of what you think is supposed to happen. Like just because you're raising your hand and you're volunteering a lot. I didn't know that was going to happen and come to fruition. I, you know, thought if probably that didn't happen, I'd probably go start another race or do something else, you know, of that nature. But, so yeah, in 2008 is when, I think we did, you know, Cool and AR for the first time under NorCal Ultras. So that's kind of when that kind of transferred and took place. And so the coaching kind of went by the wayside a little bit. I didn't have enough time to do that and to do race management too. And then of course compete as an athlete as well. So something had to give, but yeah, so that's 2008. Yeah.
And then the COVID hits and then, you know, we have everyone's at home doing FKTs. And then, but this year AR50 happened. Everyone was excited about that. That was pretty cool. People were just stoked that something was going to happen. Mm-hmm. How did you, I mean, and then Rio is this fall. So I wanted to just kind of chat about, you know, how has it been? And then kind of lead up to Rio, how is that shaping up? we have a lot of questions in the chat room about Rio. So
Cool. I don't want to, dwell on COVID too much, right? I mean, people lost their lives and it was really not just terrible what was taking place, but certainly for a lot of businesses, small businesses, especially here in California, it was no fun. It was, really, really, really hard. Obviously on all of us, as a community, as participants, but also as a business to figure out how to stay alive. And, we all were forced to obviously come up with creative solutions and opportunities with virtual racing and other things in order to weather the storm. And we didn't know how long that was going to be. And that was the hardest part. And I think that's a tricky part for a lot of us who are these type A overachieving people, is that we want to know the timeline. We want to know how long it takes to train and what exactly when it's over. And I can put my head around that. And I couldn't put my head around that because we had no clue what was going to happen. And we just kept getting, no's, maybe in a year, So gratefully in March-ish of this year, closer to April, things were starting to lift with, as it relates to the California State Park System, which is, our permitting entities for most of our races. And, we were able to start having races again in some fashion with restrictions. Obviously, we had quite a few still in place at AR50 this year. So we were not able to do some of the things that we're normally able to do. But fast forward, going forward to November to Rio, super, super excited. So anybody who's wondering, full opening, crews, spectators, the whole nine yards, we'll be able to do our expo setup. It'll really feel like, it's back to normal, if you will. I don't know if normal technically exists, but, it's back to what you can expect, for this particular race. And I think most other races, nationwide too, we're having Boston Marathon in the fall and all these road marathons with lots of people. So it's exciting to see, and knowing that we're trending in the correct direction. We're very excited, myself, my team, just to not have all these limitations and restrictions and have to figure out all these alternative solutions for people. And, at the end of it, obviously people want to run, qualify, whatever it is, but it does dilute the experience when you can't have your family and your friends and your, crew chiefs there. And especially on 100 like Rio, it's already a solo adventure, and it becomes even more, solo when you strip away those things. So, so grateful, so happy to know that that is not going to be the case, and we'll have lots of fanfare.
Yeah, I know that we've talked to a couple of race directors, and through COVID and changing dates and not getting permits and that heartbreak, and the financial toll is a real thing too. Besides all that, they've picked up some good habits now for aid station cleanliness, and they've worked out some of that. I'm sure you've picked up some of that too, and will implement some good hygiene, things for Rio. I do have a couple of people asking if there's any course changes to Rio.
That's a good question. And the answer is it's in progress. So the course as it stands now, which starts at Beals Point and does a loop around Lake Natoma and then goes up and pretty much marries the AR 50 course and the Way to Cool course together. We will be eliminating what we did this year at AR 50 is the mountain bike loop at Granite Bay. So it's a kind of a 2.5 mile kind of detour, so to speak. You feel like you're running in a giant circle. And on a training run, it's totally fun, but I totally get it. In a race, it's kind of arduous and painful. Mm-hmm. And especially Rio, where you have to do it two times because it's out and back on the loop course. So that part is coming out absolutely for sure. So that's a total of 5 miles. So we will be putting that 5 miles somewhere in the beginning of the race. So whether that means our goal is to try to incorporate some of the Johnny Cash loop on this nice. For obvious reasons. The Johnny Cash, like, let's do this. So we're still working out the mileage on that. So the way I see it right now is that we'll start at Beals and head, you know, downstream, and then it will hook to the Johnny Cash probably on East Natoma, and then do the lake loop and come back, and hopefully we'll get enough mileage in that loop to make up for that. And then from Beals on up to Auburn and Cool, it will be exactly what most people have run in the last couple of years. So yeah, I think it's going to be even more epic and fun, if you will.
I'm so excited for that. I'm sure a lot of people in the chat were.
That's like breaking news, people, because like I have not said a word, and you know, we're just trying to flesh out, like run different sections, and you know how it is, measure a course and just try to figure things out. So stay tuned. Yeah, we'll do that as soon as we can.
Yay! Well, thank you for. You heard it here first. Yeah. Come on, 99 interview. I mean, we get all the good stuff here. Anything else you want to tell the Rio runners to prepare for? Anything else?
Oh gosh. Well, I mean, weather-wise, I hope it's good, not super rainy and treacherous like Mike had in 17. I was sick as a dog that year too. But bragging rights, kudos to you for stretching that out. You know, I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun. There's one of the aid station captains I see on this chat, Dan Burke, who does our cardiac, which is like the best aid station.
It is. Yeah.
On course. And, you know, I feel like all the captains, of course, in normal times, but especially kind of coming back from COVID and this last year and a half that we've had, everybody is like wanting to even like up their ante, if you will, not because they have to, because they want to, and just super excited to again bring this experience to all these runners. And Rio does tend to get a lot of, you know, first time 100 milers, which is so amazing. We're so like thrilled to be part of that like first time experience for those people. But I think I just know it's going to be like electrifying, like just kind of like Disneyland on steroids, if you will, kind of just way more than in the past. And so I just think overall the camaraderie and the support, both on the, you know, on the support, the management side and the runner side, is just going to be like super, super, super fun.
Well, you submitted our questionnaire and you had advice for new runners, but I thought it was good advice for everyone. You just said, enjoy the process, stay present, become a student of the sport. And I believe it's about sharing, empowering, and educating. And I just look at you and you live your words, you know? So I think that is good for any Rio runners, anyone racing at all, anyone putting one foot in front of the other. I think that's really good advice. Anything you're excited about for the future?
Oh goodness. I'm just excited to sort of, again, kind of come back to, my usual normal mojo, if you will. You know, I think, you know, anyone when they've had a break, and we had a break from obviously doing what we normally do, but, it kind of, you know, doing Ghost Bridge 14 in April and Air 50, in May, to bring us back to like our chi, like our home. It was like, oh my gosh, we've missed this so much. And, you know, sometimes it takes that time away to realize how much you miss, you know, kind of the relationship with, you know, whomever or whatever that you have. And, I think it's definitely inspired me, to, again, we've learned a lot of different things that we can employ and do, but to kind of, you know, approach it from a different lens, if you will, that we had never thought about doing. So I think I'm just excited about, you know, kind of getting back to the groove and really, you know, making Rio just a amazing way to kind of top off our year. And then of course, we've had a pared down schedule this year, but you know, getting back on track with Way to Cool starting in March and you know, as you all know, that kicks off in December with our lottery and whatnot. So yeah, just kind of looking forward to kind of like new days ahead, but
Yeah. And hugs are back. Hugs are back. So
I know. Yeah. No, it was so cool at Western to see all that. And, you know, again, you don't realize what you didn't have or weren't getting until it was gone. And, super, super fun to have that.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for spending an hour with us, getting some of your background and some of the questions answered for Rio that's coming up. I have a few rapid fire questions just to end the show. Something silly that we always do. Nothing hard. Are you ready for it?
Totally. But this could be really hard. I don't know.
No, bring it.
Yeah.
I promise. Okay. Road or trail?
Trail.
What's your favorite post-race meal?
Ooh, definitely gonna go with a burrito.
A burrito.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
You had burritos at Ghost Bridges. Those were good.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
What's your...
Oh, a beer too. IPA too. So we can't forget that part. Sorry.
You know what? I was, when we were talking to Paulo, he had two different meals. One for after when he was running, and then one after he was race directing. Do you have a favorite post race directing meal?
Ooh. I do. Usually the races end too late to, like, you know, kind of think about food. It's like beer and face plant. But the next day I totally dig like the most amazing brunch, pancakes, French toast, eggs, bring it on. Yeah. That is like, or, and a big giant cinnamon roll too. Like, super, super, yeah. Might have to do that this weekend without anything to, you know, have it be warranted.
And then, well, prior to 2020, maybe now, I don't know. What's your favorite race to host? Is that like picking a favorite child?
Yeah, but it's okay. Gosh.
That's a tough one, huh?
It is a tough one. I think I'm torn between Air 50.
Way Too Cool has cupcakes.
Yeah, yes, it's for sure. And I would probably do my mom and my best friend Angie a disservice if I didn't go for that one. But I'm not gonna go for that one. I kind of dance between Air 50. Obviously, Way Too Cool is very historic and iconic too, but AR50 is as well, and I have some underlying personal meaning to that as well. And then, of course, Rio. You know, that is something. Maybe it was, I don't know, my fourth or fifth 100 kind of thing, but you know, certainly Norm Klein, Helen Klein, just that whole beginnings of that race and kind of, again, the history behind that. And again, these race directors in our local community. So, I'm going to go with those two. It's not one, but two.
Sweet. All right. I'll take it. And then last one, cats or dogs?
That's not fair, Jessica.
This is so not fair because I'm going to get blasted if I don't pick the dog for obvious reasons, but dude, you like so cute. Okay.
I have two dogs and two cats, so I'm neutral.
I might have to just go with the cat. I'm being swayed. Like,
I know.
Today it's cats.
Okay.
Hey?
Spencer did it. Spencer did it.
You're so cute. Oh my gosh. Like, that's so cute.
He's 10.
I might have to borrow Spencer. Come on a little trip with me and hang out with me. So
Awesome. See, those weren't that bad. So thank you so much. And just a reminder, guys, we do have our Patreon. It's $1 a month. It helps us keep the lights on and it'll get you all your swag and all your merch sooner. Get any updates from us. Thanks for hanging out, guys. And we will see you on the trails. Thanks.
Thank you, Julie.
Yeah, thank you.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.